This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're covering Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, chapters 25 and 26. The Seer Overheard and the Cave. In these chapters... Who cares? Russia attacked Poland.
Oh, I guess I don't get the joke. I'm sorry. I'm locked
in. No, that's just literally the news today. Oh. Two people died in Poland because Russia fired some missiles at Poland, claiming it was for Ukraine, and now we don't know what the consequences are going to be.
I'm sorry. This is just shows how disconnected I am from the world. Wow. Okay. Well,
that's... Which, Poland is a NATO ally.
Hey, I'm part Polish.
Okay, why does everyone have to attack Poland to start the World Wars?
I don't know, but, I guess, like I said, some of my people are Polish, so I know that used to be, a big joke. I don't know for some reason, but that's, wow. You know what, when we're done recording, I'm going to go watch the news.
Yeah, and again, by the time this episode is uploaded, we're gonna be months back, so I don't know, who knows, we'll see if everyone is still around. Thinking about zombie apocalypse.
I was gonna say maybe we'll have our team together. My husband Mike and Morgan and I can make our way up to Indiana, wherever you are.
Indeed. So, okay, but for real, chapter 25, The Seer Overheard. The fact that Harry Potter was going out with Ginny Weasley seemed to interest a great number of people, most of them girls. Yet Harry found himself newly and happily impervious to this gossip. After all, it made a very nice change to be talked about something because of something that was making him happy.
Yeah, I kind of felt bad for him in that moment, but he's like, you're not wrong there, man.
Yep. And Ginny's like, 3 Dementor attacks in a week, and all Vermil Devang does is ask me if you've got a hippogriff tattooed across your chest.
That was a pretty funny... This is pretty funny.
Yeah. What did you tell her? I told her it's a Hungarian horntail, much more macho. And what did you tell her Ron's got? A pygmy puff, but I didn't say where.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I just appreciate Ginny in these interactions because she does not take any shit whatsoever from Ron. Which, again, for the time this was written, which was totally leaning into the... There's so much coming out now in video essays and other things about how really sexist and misogynist the 90s and the early aughts were. Fact that Ginny is not taking any of it is comforting.
Yes, exactly. She was a riot girl in her time, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your permission. Since when did you give me permission to do anything? Anyway, you said yourself you'd rather it was Harry than Michael or Dean. Yeah, I would. And just as long as you don't start snogging each other in public. And again, he did the exact same thing.
Right.
Why can he do it and she can't?
Oh, Ron.
Mm-hmm. And then, we've got Ginny's a fifth year, so she's got her OWLs to contend with. So that's eating into some of their time together. And during this... Hermione comes forth with a potential, contender for who the Half-Blood Prince is. This just reminds me of when you and I were discussing all those crazy theories on who Jack the Ripper was.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's, well, yeah. And I guess that is one of the Jack the Ripper rumors, is it could have been a woman, right? Like
a madam or something.
Yeah. I've dipped out of my Jack the Ripper knowledge and the news and pretty much everything else in this world. But that was going to say, like, Hermione is with the times here too, because she's thinking possibly they've been misgendering, or not misgendering, but assuming the wrong gender of the Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah, and so he, who says it's a he? We've been through this, Hermione. Prince, right. And so she dishes out a, like, newspaper clipping and shows a picture of this skinny girl around 15, and it's captioned, Eileen Prince, captain of the Hogwarts Gobstones team. And Hermione's basically posing the idea that Prince is not a reference to gender, but a reference to her actual name.
I feel like she's, I don't trust that this is who this is. Not that, like, it's impossible because it's a woman. Like, I've talked many times about, like, I was told girls aren't good at science. So that's not my reasoning. I just, it's very good observation, but I don't think that's who this person is.
Yeah. So you think it's a red herring of sorts?
Yes, I do.
And I'm just thinking, you know, she is, I guess I'm, you know, again, she can think about the possibility, but why? Harry is so invested in the prince being a man. And so why is Hermione so invested in the prince being a woman? Like, why do they each feel there's some stake in the gender of this super intelligent person being claimed for their own, as their own?
I feel like that was a thing of this, since we're talking about of the times, it's like very, you know, that you wanted to claim that as your own. And there was kind of like the battle of the sexes. I feel like during this time was that Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, kind of that book was very popular. And I don't know. So to claim one as your own felt pretty good. But I also don't know. You know, we've talked about, I want all good things to be attributed to women and all bad things to be attributed to men. But it's not the way it works.
Yeah, so, there's an interesting thing where it's like, the truth is, you don't think a girl would have been clever enough, said Hermione angrily. How can I have hung out with you for 5 years and not think girls are clever, said Harry, stung by this. And it's, on the one hand, in earlier rereadings, I would just kind of be in Harry's position, but trying to analyze it a little more deeply, that you can have, you know, you can still, again, with implicit bias and everything, you can still have, again, black friends or female friends and not, and still be subconsciously engaging in a racist or patriarchal system. And especially because they, you know, both Ron and Harry, in how Harry writes and describes it, like, they put Hermione in her own category because they definitely other her from what they think of women, of the other girl, typically feminine girls like Lavender and Parvati, and think, oh, Hermione's better than this. Not, she is, right. She's not brilliant the way she is because she's a girl.
Right. Yeah, that's a very complex, you know, what attributes are attributed, what is attributed to women, what is attributed to men, and kind of I've heard some recent discussion is like intelligence, just because Hermione's good at, you know, traditionally more masculine things, she's considered, you know, very intelligent, when in actuality, you know, like, that's one way to be smart, and how sexist some of that stuff is. I think, I guess, like, right now, because it's only the first time I've read this, I was kind of like, I get it. You know, like, Harry is kind of offended, but there is probably some internalized misogyny there. Yeah.
And if we purely, again, not presuming Harry is giving in to subconscious implicit bias, but, you know, Harry's framing his argument that just the way he writes and just the way the prince, the notes is, like, I maybe I'm wondering out loud if Harry thinks it's a boy because the spells that the prince created are so offensive. And the idea of being, even when they were not like the true dark arts ones, there was one that made your toenails grow. Like, you know, you know, just the idea that that a boy would be more socially sanctioned to, that it would be okay for a boy to be more on the offensive, whereas if this was a girl, she would be engaging, she would be writing and inventing different types of spells.
Yeah, like I don't know, how to do your makeup or something, like just kind of sexist stuff. But
although there is the Muffliardo spell, which is about keeping things, making a buzzing noise so you can have conversations, like that could be typecasted as like more feminine. But
interesting. I mean, I guess maybe it's sexism my part, because I was like, Prince, well, obviously, like, I didn't think of the last name. But Hermione's off on her little mission to look at the, what is it, the contest to see where she, like, fell in it.
Yeah, so it is interesting, the notion of, like, again, like, we have prince and princess. Like, we don't have gender in English the way we have, like, in Romance languages. But we have, again, we have very specific words, the prince and princess, king, queen, blah, blah, blah. It's always interesting in some of the Middle Eastern languages that obviously misogyny is a big problem in the Middle East, but not all languages are gendered. Arabic is gendered with masculine and feminine the way Romance languages are, but both Turkish and Persian have no gender.
Oh, interesting.
And yet those are still very patriarchal societies.
Huh. It's funny how all this stuff works, isn't it?
Yeah. So, anyway. So Harry dismisses her theory of Eileen Prince as the half-blood prince. And Ron basically says she's just never got over you outperforming her in potions. Which, again, a part of this is her fuel. Like, she is so invested in trying to figure out this person, because part of her is like, who could possibly be better than me?
Right, right. I feel like that they're there needs to be a different group of people, like maybe some people in position of authority looking at, trying to figure out where Harry got that spell from, the Malfoy attacking spell.
Yeah. So, of course not. So, or what is he said? You don't think I'm mad wanting that book back, do you? Of course not, said Ron robustly. He was a genius, the prince. Anyway, without his Bezoar tip, I wouldn't be here to discuss it, would I? I mean, I'm not saying that spell you used on Malfoy was great, nor am I. But he healed all right, didn't he? Back on his feet. Yeah, said Harry. This was perfectly true, although his conscience squirmed slightly all the same, thanks to Snape.
I don't know. Harry's still messed up, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and so, let's see, where do we go? And so Jimmy Peaks comes forth with a little scroll from Dumbledore.
Oh, yeah.
Dumbledore just has all these random kids giving him messages.
Okay, that's what I thought. I was like, who the hell is this now? Okay.
Yeah, Jimmy Peaks. I think he's one of the beaters now.
Okay. I've seen the name, but then I was like, this is, I don't know, whatever, Dumbledore, you do. Yeah, because
we've gotten a letter from, delivered by Ginny, by Luna, by, again, a whole variety of people.
Yeah, those names kind of come up more often than good old Jimmy Peaks, but whatevs. He's helping out Dumbledore to get the message to Mr. Potter.
And it's not the typical, oh, it's time for a lesson. Like, you have to come to my office now, which they rightly infer that, oh my God, he's found one and he's going to let me go.
I wonder how Harry feels about that decision after, but we'll find out.
Indeed. So Harry is going to Dumbledore's office, but he's distracted, of all people, by Professor Trelawney.
Who's like trying to get into the Room of Requirement, right?
Yes. Yeah, Harry realizes this and he's like, were you trying to get in there? I didn't know students knew about. Not all of them do. But what happened? You screamed. I wish to dispose certain impersonal items in the room.
What's she up to?
Well, clearly she's a drunk. She's a freaking alcoholic trying to hide her sherry bottles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's... I can't... Wait,
she couldn't just banish them? Or, like, isn't there, like, any recycling in Hogwarts?
I mean, also, like, whatever, man. She's eccentric. She could be like, oh, yeah, it's whatever. I mean, shoot, what's that other guy? Slughorn's boozing with the kids. Whatever.
Yeah. So Yeah, so it seems that she was in, again, the room of hidden things where, you know, where Harry stashed the book, but she was thrown out of the room. And Harry highly suspects that it was Malfoy.
Of course he does, because he's freaking obsessed with Malfoy.
Yeah, I would hazard a guess a male, and it sounded happy, very happy, as though it were celebrating most definitely. Mm-hmm. So during all this, he's like, here, you know, oh, here's my evidence against Malfoy, like, bring Trelawney with me to Dumbledore.
Right, and again, well, we'll get to it, but Dumbledore is kind of like, shut the hell up. Yeah. In so many words.
But we get, what did you think of this little tidbit of what Trelawney reveals?
Yeah, so that basically Snape was holding a little glass, not really, but, you know, hearing what happened and then scurried off and told Voldemort about the prophecy, right? So basically caused him a world of hurt and Harry a world of hurt. And he is pretty not thrilled by this revelation, to the point where, like, he's having to, like, calm himself down in Dumbledore's presence, which is kind of not super... I mean, he's had a couple tense moments with Dumbledore, but I don't know if he's ever had this reaction. Like, he doesn't understand why Snape was allowed to still teach at Hogwarts after, you know, this, because he thinks it resulted in his parents' death.
Yeah, he ventured as much in his thoughts to basically put as much blame on it's together with Snape and Wormtail, my parents are dead.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know.
And so Harry ditches Trelawney, goes to Dumbledore's office, and again is so enraged that he's even forgotten. He's like, you know, well, Harry, I promised you could come with me.
Yeah, he's so mad that he's like forgot why he's even there in the first place. But
yeah, so you found one. You found a Horcrux, I believe so. It's natural to be afraid, said Dumbledore. I'm not scared, said Harry at once, and it was perfectly true. Fear was one emotion he was not feeling at all.
No, he was just pissed.
So Dumbledore goes on to say, I believe it is to be hidden in a cave on the coast many miles from here, a cave I've been trying to locate for a very long time, the cave in which Tom Riddle once terrorized two children from his orphanage on their annual trip, you remember.
Yeah, that's pretty effed once you know what's coming.
I mean, yeah, and finally, you know, Dumbledore takes a look at Harry and he's like, what has happened to you? Nothing. What has upset you? I'm not upset, Harry. You were never a good Occlumens.
That was so great.
Yeah, the wrong word to use.
Right.
And so Harry goes caps lock.
Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah, I was hoping that was Dumbledore when I saw that in the page, and then of course no.
Yeah, that was caps lock where Harry is raging and he's not throwing things, but he has to, you know, keeps cranking and tight and balling his hands into his fist. Excuse me.
Bless you.
And you could, again, just really bad timing. And, you know, it shows Dumbledore's face is whitened. Like, he's like, oh shit, like, this is the worst possible time for him to figure this out now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He has I think Harry says it's like subtle, but he definitely has a little, like, Dumbledore's face kind of drains.
Yeah. So Dumbledore finally says, Professor Snape made a terrible mistake. He was still in Lord Voldemort's employ on the night he heard the first half of Professor Trelawney's prophecy. Naturally, he hastened to tell his master what he had heard, for it concerned his master most deeply. But he did not know, he had no possible way of knowing, which boy Voldemort would hunt from then onward, or that the parents he would destroy in his murderous quest were people that Professor Snape knew, and that they were your mother and father. Harry let out a yell of mirthless laughter. He hated my dad like he hated Sirius. Haven't you noticed, Professor, how people Snape hates tend to end up dead? And Dumbledore goes on to say, you have no idea of the remorse Professor Snape felt when he realized how Lord Voldemort had interpreted the prophecy. Harry, I believe it is to be the greatest regret of his life and the reason that he returned to our side. So what do you make of that? Because because we knew as far as book four in the Pensieve, when Harry went in and saw the trials, that Dumbledore vouched for Snape that, you know, that he turned spy for us at great personal risk. And so it's suggesting that, you know, that this is the reason why.
Yeah. I mean, I almost feel like this should be called the story of Snape instead of Harry Potter, because it's just like this tiny reveals of this, like, I know, bigger story that is coming, I guess, in the next book, probably. But I think the thing that I highlighted was that, you know, Dumbledore has repeated the line, I trust Severus Snape completely. Like, it's like, you know, no question. Harry doesn't know why, and Dumbledore is not giving him a reason. It's just like, I have my reasons, and this is why, and that's all you're going to get. And Sirius is petty and kind of a dick, but I don't think he's like murderous. I don't know why. He just seems kind of not at that level.
In some ways, you don't think Sirius is competent enough to be a murderer, not in terms of magical ability, because he is very powerful, but just in terms of forethought and premeditation required to murder.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think he has it. Like, I just don't think he has it in him, which makes it sound like that's like a, you know, something to be proud of. It's not. Like,
are you talking about Sirius or Snape?
I'm talking about Snape.
Oh, okay. You said Sirius, I think.
Oh, Severus. Yeah. I meant to say Severus.
Okay, because so then I retract what I said, because it's, I think Sirius is, again, doesn't have the patience for or premeditation for stuff. Snape totally does.
Yeah, I think, and I almost think that, like, man, these S names, Sirius could do it. Like, and I don't know I think it would be definitely a crime of passion, but, like, Snape, I'll just call him Snape instead of Severus or Sirius, two of the S's. Snape, I just think there's just something that he, like a sensitivity or something that's there that he couldn't kill somebody. Now I'll probably eat my words in the next book, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
So Dumbledore did not speak for a moment. He looked as though he was trying to make up his mind about something. At last he said, I am sure I trust Severus Snape completely. So I always kind of interpret that as him thinking, like, I could tell him the reason why, you know, just to shut him up, but I'm not gonna.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting decision on Dumbledore's part. It's like, just, you, sometimes, it's almost like he's saying, sometimes you just need to trust, like, just trust it. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Dumbledore's given him a lot of reasons not to trust him, but yep. Maybe he has.
And then Harry goes on to say, Draco Malfoy's up to something, and you're leaving the school, and Malfoy might decide to what? Enough. Do you think I have once left this school unprotected during my absences this year? I have not. Tonight when I leave, there will again be additional protection. Please do not suggest that I do not take the safety of my students seriously, Harry. So yeah, Dumbledore is like to the point of getting offended. Like, how dare you suggest that I leave, that I don't take the safety of my students seriously? But I'm thinking, again, all the bodily harm these students come to and his questionable appointees to certain teaching positions. Like, yeah. this doesn't come off as Dumbledore's level of offense in this insinuation. I don't read into as much as in years past, because, like, oh, of course he's Dumbledore, he's great. Like, of course he would never jeopardize the well-being of the students. And it's like,
maybe depends on the situation. Yeah, I don't know. I know he's like, chill with the damn Malfoy talk. Like, just shut up.
Yeah, and he's like, I do not wish to discuss the matter any further. And then Dumbledore says, do you wish to come with me tonight? Because Harry thought he blew his chance.
Yeah. And yeah, I kind of thought he blew his chance too for a second, but no.
Yeah. And Dumbledore is insistent on, like, I expect you to do absolutely everything I tell you to do.
Yeah, even if it means leaving me for dead.
Yeah, no ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah, that's a big ask. We can kind of come to find out.
And then finally he relents. Yes, sir. Very good. Then I wish for you to go and fetch your invisibility cloak and meet me in the entrance hall in 5 minutes' time.
So he hauls ass out of there, but not, he does make time to, like, tell Hermione and Ron to, like, be on the lookout.
Yeah, take the Marauder's Map, like, watch Malfoy, watch Snape, take the Felix Felicis, I'll be with Dumbledore, I don't need it. And, yeah, that's, yeah. And
they kind of, then they just make their way into this next part, which, I mean, I
don't. Yep, so, yeah, so Harry puts on his invisibility cloak, so it looks like Dumbledore's taking a little stroll to have a pint.
Yeah,
lovely. I'll buy him lonesome. Nothing wrong with that. Take yourself out for a drink.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes. Makes me think, because this Thursday I have one of my monthly witches' night outs at one of the local bars, the Crazy Horse.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway. So, yeah, so Rover's Murda sees them, and she's like, sorry, I'm going off to the Hogshead. I need a quiet atmosphere. And then they disapparate into the night.
Ooh, spooky. And then go
directly into chapter 26, The Cave. Which, what did you think of when you just read that chapter title?
I didn't really know what to expect. It reminded me of the, like, you know, Wuthering Heights or something, with the moors and the water and the dampness. But the little picture, I was like, okay. So I didn't expect to meet the Inferi.
Was it the Inferi, I think?
Yeah. I didn't expect them to show up again, but there we were.
But that's a testament to Harry's writing style. He specifically makes mention of a creature or a concept in the beginning that ends up being very, very relevant in the end, like with the port key in Goblet of Fire.
Yeah, true. True, 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 true.
Yeah, so they operate to this coastline where it's a towering cliff. Few large chunks of rock, such as the one upon which Harry and Dumbledore were standing, looked as though it had been broken away from the cliff face at some point in the past. It was bleak, harsh view, and the sea and the rock unrelieved by any tree or sweep of grass or sand. Which, have you ever lived in a coastal city?
No, I have not.
I studied abroad in Rabat, and specifically in Rabat, at least in the city proper, like, there are no beaches. It's just, again, on the side where there just are these huge ass rocks and the cliffs, and the waves just keep coming, and you don't want to fall over the edge. Otherwise,
no. No, it did remind me of something I saw in Alaska, but where it's just like, they weren't rocks, there was trees on that. But anyway, just kind of the distance and the isolation, that's what it made me think of, just way out there.
Yeah, and so Dumbledore surmises that this is a little bit away from where the orphanage would take the children for a little field trip, and that they couldn't have been able to climb down these rocks without magic.
Okay, yeah. Okay, these were the two kids that he killed, right?
Not that he killed, but just that they were never right in the head afterwards. You know, again, it suggests that they were mentally impaired in some capacity, and all they ever said was that they went into a cave with Tom Riddle. So we're meant to assume that he tortured them magically in some capacity.
Dude, being in that cave is pretty freaking torturous. They witnessed the same stuff they did. Harry and Dumbledore does.
Yeah, so Harry goes, but his final destination and ours lies a little farther on come. And we've got Dumbledore basically being an Olympian class level swimmer and just swimming into the cave.
Oh my gosh. So my thought was like, he's got robes on, right? That's like probably not like that's not helping his like flow or whatever.
And he's swimming perfect breaststroke with his wand between his teeth.
What a sight that has to be.
Yeah, can you imagine Slughorn doing that?
No, I can't imagine. I mean, I just kept thinking about the fabrics and how difficult that would be. I don't know why that's what I was hung up on, but.
Yep, and Harry's trailing after him. And they finally resurface in this little pocket of rock. And Dumbledore's like, yes, this is the place. How can you tell? It has known magic, said Dumbledore simply.
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting thing that comes to light in this chapter about certain magic having like a signature,
basically. Yeah, this is merely the antechamber, the entrance hall. We need to penetrate the inner place. Now it is Lord Voldemort's obstacles that stand in our way rather than those nature made.
All right.
And Dumbledore's approaching the wall of the cave, caressed it with black fingertips, muttering words in a strange tongue that Harry did not understand. So I just thinking he's like saying, Ibnabotep, something crazy.
Maybe, yeah.
Some crazy mantras or chants. Mm-hmm. And he finds a spot, and for a moment, an arched outline appeared there, blazing white, as though there was a powerful light behind the crack. So it kind of reminds me of very much in the way how they, Gandalf and the gang get into the mines of Moria in Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Yeah.
And like that sort of glowing archway. But it only glows momentarily, and Dumbledore's like, the door requires payment.
Right. Which is blood.
Yes. Blood, if I'm not mistaken. Blood. I said it was crude, said Dumbledore, who sounded disdainful, even disappointed, at though Voldemort had fallen short of the standards Dumbledore expected. Which, it just makes me think of the gif, yeah, basic.
So yeah.
Yeah, because literally Dumbledore's like, oh my god, he's so basic, you have to give him blood. You can't get more creative than that.
He really is. He's like, call him a basic bitch. He's like, huh, all right, Voldemort, like, there are worse things than this, but whatever. Well, I guess we'll do that.
Yeah. And before Harry can do anything, Dumbledore just takes this huge ass knife that he's summoned and just cuts his arm.
Scary. Also, I thought it was interesting that he said Harry's blood is more valuable than his own. I'm like,
yeah, this... Again, it's this weird thing where, again, Harry is, like, wizard Jesus, but I don't know if, again, it's not, I don't think it's wholly healthy for the adults in his life to be framing him.
Yeah.
Framing him in this way.
Right. Like, the chosen one. Like, they give him a lot of shit about that, but kind of.
Yeah, well, that's the prophet doing its own things. Like, they can't control that, but specifically the adults in the Order of the Phoenix, they
kind of treat him like that, like he's, you know,
again,
I don't know.
Which anyway, so the opening in the archway stays this time because the payment has been made, and so they creep through it, and they were standing on the edge of a great black lake, so vast that Harry could not make out the distant banks. In a cavern so high, the ceiling was too out of sight. A misty greenish light shone far away in what looked like the middle of the lake. It was reflected in the completely still water below. The greenish glow and the light from the two wands were the only things that broke the otherwise velvety blackness. What'd you think of this stuff?
It sounds very, it paints a picture. There's very good descriptions of the location here, and I could very much see it in my in my mind.
There is a piece of like instrumental music that I think was written as part of the audiobook for The Historian by Elizabeth Kostova.
Oh, okay.
And the piece of music is called A Lonely Place, and it's very quiet. Again, it's just a piano, very simple but very eerie and haunting melody, and I'm like, that is what I think, like, if I think of like that music being part of a ballet, like I literally think of this black lake with the green misty island in the middle.
Yeah, it's pretty cool setting. I mean, this part's cool, and then it just gets like hella worse.
Yep. And so they test out, let's see if they can summon the Horcrux. And so were you totally expecting for it to just be sea monsters or like, you know, something of that ilk? Like what was your thoughts of, again, realizing what exactly in question was guarding the Horcrux?
I thought it was incredibly creepy to have that be it was like kind of like the River Styx or something. You know, there's just like a lot of imagery that it kind of conjured up. But I did not, did I think it was going to be like the Kraken or something? I don't know if I thought that's what it was going to be or not. I didn't expect what it was, but.
And I guess just raises the question of again, obviously Voldemort has configured this cave to serve its purposes, so we don't know exactly what it was like, you know, before his magic came in and changed some things. So, like, is there a scenario where, like, oh, these bodies washed in and, like, some of them were, like, just there and Voldemort used that to his advantage? Because if not, then that means he just would have had to kill a lot of people and literally bring their bodies in to populate the lake.
I don't know, man. This is a weird lake. I don't really have any interest in going there, so.
Yep. And so Dumbledore is feeling around again, and he comes across this old rusty chain.
Yeah. So a real little boat.
Yep. And it's like, how did you know that was there? Asked Harry in astonishment. Magic always leaves traces. Sometimes very distinctive traces. I taught Tom Riddle. I know his style.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting.
AKA, I know Tom is a little dramatic, you know, drama queen. And This is so typical.
Yeah, he has not, he has a flair for the obviously dramatic in Dumbledore's mind.
Yeah, so we've got a little rowboat. And Harry is thinking in terms of weight, it won't fit.
Right.
But to Dumbledore, it's like, it's not about weight, it's about the magical presence. And this boat probably can only register one wizard at a time. But because you're not of age yet, you will not count.
Yeah, that was a little, that I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't know. That was strange to me.
So that little tidbit yields one of my favorite quotes from this book, whether it'll be the actual, my all-time favorite that I'll do at the wrap-up, but it's the one that says, age is foolish and forgetful when it underestimates youth.
Yeah.
And I think a lot about this in the context of how we are critical of the media that teenage girls consume.
Oh yeah, I think there's a book on my shelf about something like that. What's it called? Everything I Need to Get From You. But that's one of my favorite things to talk about because of the Beatles and Harry Styles and all that stuff. It's a fascinating topic to me.
Yeah. So yeah, there's the idea that because there are junk food, you know, very lowbrow forms of entertainment for young men and boys. But it's not, none of that is demonized as being these stains on society and
right.
On culture as the stuff that women tend to like that's very lowbrow.
Do you think it has to do with the puritanical like society that we're in and kind of like, I'm relating this specifically to like the Beatles and Elvis and Harry Styles. It's always like, because typically it's like a boy band. And when I was growing up, like NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Feminine interest and fear of feminine sexuality.
Could be partially, again, puritanical fear of sexuality, but it's just it's more, because it's not directly sexualized when it comes to, like, again, whether it's books or, like, TV shows, it's not so much about sexual stuff. I think it's trying to perpetuate the narrative that women are intellectually incompetent.
Yeah.
And therefore the things that they consume that are lowbrow are just further evidence of that. And therefore we should not trust women's intellectual ability.
That is so, like, I'm going to use an example that I know I have used all the time. I don't think I've mentioned this recently, but 50 Shades of Grey, like, raked in money. And I feel like the, you know, what people kind of attribute to success and knowledge of how to, you know, it just basically is how to get money. Well, E.L. James knew what the heck she was doing. I mean, she was very, very wealthy author. And that was predominantly, you know, like funded by women. So I don't think she's that stupid, people.
Yeah. Nor is Paris Hilton that stupid.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's, nor are the Kardashians stupid.
No, I mean, I'm not a fan, but they know what they're doing, you know, like,
yeah, it's so I come at it as, you know, whether subconsciously or not, that's fueled by a desperate need to continue to push a narrative that women intellectually are not on the same level as men, and therefore we can use the lowbrow entertainment they consume to further push that narrative.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite things to think about, to be honest. It's just the, I mean, it really is. I was always very fascinated by that. I'm trying to think of like the male equivalent, because sometimes that's always like seen as more prestige, you know.
Yeah, because I think specifically the screenplay writer for one of the Twilight movies, as she was adapting the book to a screenplay, to a movie, she basically said something to the effect of, we have these ridiculous Transformers movies that don't contribute anything, aren't highbrow or anything of that nature, but are they vilified the way we vilify Twilight? No.
Hell no. Yeah. Yes. Catherine Hardwick. All right. Cool. Well, I think Dumbledore's point too, I think it's really easy to forget what it's like to be a young person a lot of times. So
I think, yeah, and I feel like I come across this in my own work at a university, because, you know, I'm not directly an academic advisor, that's by other colleagues, but obviously I interact with the students and dealing with the day-to-day operations of the program I work for. And so a lot of times it falls on me to convey, you know, the students' opinions and the students' feedbacks to the higher ups. And some of them, especially some of them in DC, when I'm not even saying like you should do this or you shouldn't do this, or like, you know, I'm not saying what you're doing doesn't have a pedagogical or logical base, but me literally just trying to voice this is what the students feel and why, that them just completely dismissing it, trapped in their own bubble of superiority and sanctimoniousness. And it's just like, you know, at the end of the day, we are a program, and, you know, and there's so much rhetoric in, you know, the culture of the student, university student as the customer.
Right. Yeah.
So to a certain extent, we have to pay attention to what they're saying and what they want.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, such is the world of, you know, modern day academia.
Yeah. Well, being a younger woman in any sort of like, it's just a fun challenge when you're around older people. It's like, I'm not an idiot. I know you think I am, but you know, I don't know when that will change. It would be nice.
Which just makes me think of, sorry to go on such a tangent, everyone, but I'm just thinking about, I feel the level of sexism I've experienced increasing as I've hit my 30s in relation to my typical experience, which all throughout my 20s, the majority of people I hung out with, both professionally and personally, were substantially older, and me not relating as much to my own peer group, but and I would say that's still true to a certain extent, but I'm just bumping into a lot more sexism than I used to, and not being like, oh, you're getting older, Amy, you're part of us now. It's like, no, you're supposed to be, you know, down there.
Right. Yeah, people are so really intimidated by smart women, so especially smart young women. That's like, whew, that's a lot. So I mean, I'm sure people are.
Well, anyway, so they get in the little boat and travel across the lake, and Dumbledore has the punting stick for the gondola in Venice. Not really.
This would be a spooky trip to Venice.
Yep. And then Harry realizes there are corpses in the water.
I did not expect that. I have to say, I was like, what? What is going on here? I did watch a clip. I wanted to see how this was like portrayed in the movies. And it's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Actually, some of the artwork that I stumbled upon was pretty almost creepier. But this is very like, ooh, this is very horror-esque.
Yeah. And it's just, again, we get another very quotable piece from Dumbledore, that it is the unknown we fear when we look upon death and darkness, nothing more. And again, it's a great quote, but it's like, Dumbledore, we aren't waxing philosophical about the notion of death in the afterlife. These are literally animated corpses.
Right, right, right. He's always got it like that little wisdom he's got to share. Man.
Yep. And then he's like, I wish I had taken some Felix Felices.
Yeah, I mean, I would too, man. This is quite scary.
Yep. And so, yeah, they get to the little island, which is no bigger than Dumbledore's office.
Yeah, this is a real treat.
Yeah.
In this situation.
Basin is full of emerald liquid emitting a phosphorescent glow. Now, that's a $3 word.
Yeah. And, you know, because, yeah. Oh, man.
So Dumbledore goes to touch it, but he can't touch it. Like, stops like an inch before.
There's like a shield, right?
Like, yeah, there's like some shield. Invisible force field. So it cannot be transfigured. It cannot be charmed. Cannot be vanished, parted, scooped up, siphoned, made to change its nature in any way. Therefore, I must drink it.
Yeah, I was like, what? Where did, what? Like, what? This leap's like, well, that looks like it would probably be toxic. Probably should drink it. Okay, man, like, this was, I don't know, whatever. I wondered how he got to that point. I guess I should not question the almighty Dumbledore.
Well, but I think he's coming to it in terms of, oh, of course, Voldemort is this sadistic.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like, well, why not just dump it out? But then I was like, well, it's probably going to be one of those things that just kind of constantly fills back up.
Yeah, unless you're legitimately drinking it, it won't.
Yeah.
It won't empty.
That's, I mean, well, Dumbledore does. He's drinking it up.
And, but what if it kills you? Oh, I doubt it would work like that. And then he asked him, like, I'm sorry, Harry, I don't think it would kill me immediately, because Voldemort would want to ask some questions.
Yeah, God, I, the end is near. I know it is. I know this is, I know it is, because I'm reading this and I'm like, we have had so much time with Dumbledore. He is about to die. I don't know when it'll happen. There's not much of the book left. It's stressing me out.
Yes. So, and so he reiterates to Harry, you said you would do whatever the fuck I told you to.
Yeah, Harry. Every worst case scenario you thought of, the one you didn't think of is, of course, what's going to happen.
Yep. And he toasts to Harry, to your good health, and drains the goblet.
And he's kind of like fine for the first couple swallows. Like,
yeah, he gets through three goblets and then things start to go downward.
Yeah. And this is pretty, like, I think that, you know, there are those people that kind of, I don't know. I think a lot of people would say that have a good relationship with their father would say their father. Like, seeing somebody like that in pain or a stressful situation is very, like, jarring. So,
yeah, so the potion's effects, the way I can best describe it, I've never really thought about it that deeply, but it seems to be a combination of the Cruciatus curse, you know, torturing, but via like a Dementor reliving your worst nightmare.
Yeah, it's a nothing I would want to drink. It is, that is what it is.
Yes, and Dumbledore is saying things like, I don't want, don't make me. You know, don't hurt them, kill me instead.
Yeah, it's this very kind of, like, this is so strange. And I just can't, I kept thinking about, like, Harry witnessing this, like, this person who is kind of father figure-esque in his mind, it being so vulnerable and, like, in pain. Yeah. It's really upsetting.
It's all my fault, all my fault. Please make it stop. I know I did wrong. Oh, please make it stop, and I'll never, never again.
Yeah, what the fuck is he talking about?
Yeah, just... And then it gets to a point where Dumbledore's like screaming, kill me.
Yeah, this is all very stressful. And here, and again, Harry is like not... This is not like... This is stressful for him as well.
Yeah, like hating himself, repulsed by what he was doing. He just kept doing it.
Yeah, I mean, because... I mean, he made a promise and I guess he's keeping it, so...
Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, Harry's so distracted by Dumbledore's condition that he's not even fully registering. The bowl is emptying and there's a locket at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, now, so we know that, you know, they were on Dumbledore wasn't sure which one it would be, but with the locket, we now know it's Slytherin's locket.
Makes sense with the green and all that.
This is true. And so, yeah, we got Dumbledore drinks all of it, and Dumbledore's like, you know, slowly coming to himself, and he croaks out water.
Yeah. I think, I don't know if we mentioned this earlier, but like Dumbledore says to Harry, this is what kind of screwed with my mind in this situation. Dumbledore says to Harry, like, don't touch the water. Like, just avoid it at all costs. I mean, the bodies are there too, you know, so Harry's like, yeah, no shit. But here's the situation where he's thirsty and Harry's like, doesn't he like try to fill the cup up and it doesn't work?
Yeah. So he tries, you know, he tries to use the normal water charm to just spout out clean water from his wand, Aquamenti. Right. But of course, Voldemort foresees that and just, no, that's not going to work. The only way you can get water is to get it from the lake, which of course is going to trigger which is pretty smart.
Yeah. Also, like, I was thinking about, like if you got a bunch of dead, rotting corpses, that water's probably pretty nasty.
That is the thing. Yeah, I'm just like, you know, it's portrayed as, you know, again, for points of presentation, the water is shown as being very clear. So maybe there's some, like, magical buffer of not being contaminated. But I'm just like, oh, that was disgusting.
Yeah, just try not to think about it, I guess. I don't know. But
yeah, because even Harry realizes that, what does he say? I'm trying. And then Harry knew instinctively the only way left to get water because Voldemort had planned it. So,
yeah, of course he did.
And the minute he touches the lake,
it's on.
The zombies come out.
World War Z. Like that scene in World War Z.
World War Z. And Harry does not have the thought, even though Dumbledore told him like a few minutes ago, fire.
Right. He's panicking and he's not thinking.
Mm-hmm. And again, going back to the whole old folklore around vampires, like why is it specifically fire that is supposed to, like, you know, destroy these types of really dark creatures? Is it just because they're dark and fire is light?
That could be it. Is that a way of like a biblical way of like burning off evil? I mean, because I know they killing witches.
Even predating the Abrahamic religions, like the first big monotheistic religion, Zoroastrianism, fire is a huge, like, purging, purifying force.
Yeah.
So that's always been part of fire's mystique.
Purification.
In earth-based and monotheistic religions, that it represents energy, it can purify. Like, part of Nowruz, the Persian New Year, traditionally is to jump over a bonfire to purify oneself.
Do you do that?
Well, again, they're small fires that you just jump over. Like they're not walking into this. Yeah, no.
No, I'm a little fire. Well, okay, yeah, I mean, the cleansing and all of that, it makes sense. And I don't know if, I guess, I'm overthinking this, but they're probably, you know, the corpses aren't necessarily evil. Like Dumbledore even says that. He's like, it's a body, like, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, but these guys are also trying to attack them. So I don't know, whatever. We're lighting them on fire.
And the one time where it is okay to use the big bad Septum Sempra spell, they have no blood to spill.
Yeah, come on, Harry, get with it.
Yep, so, and a good thing for Harry that Dumbledore comes around again and pulls out a big fire lasso from his wand.
Hell yeah, of course he does. I saw this, it was pretty cool.
There is some cover art that, most cover art for Half-Blood Prince, whether the original American edition or others, like, most of it is Dumbledore and Harry in the cave on this little island, and some of them portray Dumbledore with the lasso of fire, and it's awesome.
That is awesome. It's more exciting than mine, which is like just him chilling. So
really, okay, yeah. Because again, I have the older one where it's again all the green.
Yeah. Oh wow.
With That's the basin. Funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to have those, but
yeah. So Dumbledore is able to keep the Ring of Fire around them, and they get back, and Dumbledore quickly takes the Horcrux, takes Slytherin's locket, and they go back to the boat, and they make the long the trip back.
And Dumbledore is not in the best condition.
No, he's not. It's taken all of his energy to summon this fire. And luckily, by the time they get to the edge of the lake, the zombies are not coming back.
Thank God.
They're not coming back. And then Harry's literally, you know, half carrying Dumbledore to the entrance. And Dumbledore's like, the protection was well designed. Only one alone could not have done it. You did well, very well, Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they go back in the outside and Harry's like, okay, I will apparate us back. And... you know, don't worry. And Dumbledore's like, I am not worried, Harry, said Dumbledore, his voice a little stronger despite the freezing water. I am with you.
That's very nice, but that also means he's about to die. So that's, that was like, oh, great. So here we go. I don't know when it's going to happen.
Some say that this is a sort of, you know, a flip on the words, because in the beginning of this book, right before they go to see Slughorn, to persuade him to take the job, you know, Dumbledore says something to the effect of, but you don't have to worry about being attacked with me or being attacked tonight, Harry. And Harry's like, why? And he's like, because you are with me. And so flipping on, I am not worried. I'm with you.
Yeah. And he's going to die. So that's very depressing. Try not to think about it. But I, you know, with that the little like moving line, I'm like, oh, great. I know where this was going. I thought I'd get him for another book, but I know I'm not going to.
Did you, knowing the spoiled in the way that you are, did you think he was going to die in the cave?
No. And then this is purely just by that there were more pages. Like if I was reading this on a Kindle, maybe I would be like, but I didn't think we were done with him quite yet. I honestly thought he would be in the last book for a short bit. So, but I just, either way, I don't know if he dies in this one or the next one. I know he's a goner. I just don't know when. So it's coming up though. I do know that.
Yes. Cause again, who knows what the long-term ramifications of that potion arm, because we already know that the ring made his hand black. How long can he keep taking these hits from Horcruxes?
Right. Yeah, he's only like 600 years old, right?
Yeah. So, like... No, he's only 100 years old.
Oh, he's 100. Yeah. I was thinking of vampires. I'm sorry. I was thinking of a movie I just watched.
Alrighty then. And now we move on to our exercise of, do we even really need to have it? The Gothic Geek Out.
No, I mean...
it's just the cave. Yeah.
Right, right. That is the perfect Gothic setting. And, I mean, and again, Gothic horror a little bit with the fairy. And the only one that I kind of... thought gothic-y and typically I guess more romantic gothic was like Snape overhearing Trelawney and that kind of whole drama there that was a little more, but the cave takes the cake. I mean, that's a goth setting.
Yeah, because it's a gothic setting, because it's hiding a very important MacGuffin, you know, that literary, you remember it, do you remember your literary terms?
Oh yeah, the Black Falcon, yeah, or the Maltese Falcon, that's the MacGuffin thing, yeah.
Yep. So yeah, we've got the hiding of an important object, we've got zombies, we've got a dark cave.
Right, right, and glowing green.
Glowing green smoky island.
Yes.
Yeah.
Phosphorescent.
Yeah, the only thing I'm thinking is, again, tying into the past, like, Voldemort chooses this as the hiding place for a piece of his soul. He does it, number one, because no one else knows about his childhood, except, again, these very few, like, you know, Dumbledore. And Dumbledore only kind of knows this because he, you know, made a point to, like, inquire into the, you know, with the mistress of the orphanage and who told him this incident happened.
Right, right, right. So he's just building his.
So yeah, so it's the Gothic connection to the past because Voldemort is choosing. Again, this is not a place where, like, it's not like he would be proud of this place in terms of, oh, showing his Death Eaters, like, oh, this is where I, started my political movement. Like, it's very personal in his journey of, you know, realizing and, you know, forming, I can torture people with my mind.
What a gift. What a gift.
Ugh. Yeah. And, you know, and using that and realizing, you know, that, you know, to him, that was a huge breakthrough in his, you know, in his, him defining his sense of self. And so therefore, because he's a drama queen, I'm going to put my piece of my soul in this cave.
Yeah. I love the drama.
That I tortured two kids in when I was like 8 years old.
You know, you do you, man. No, I do like his penchant for drama, but he's an asshole. So.
Indeed. So, yeah. Anything more to be said about the gothiciness?
I mean, it was a pretty solid gothic chapter after a little bit of like teen angst in the chapter before with, you know, Harry and Jenny can't see each other and all that. So I appreciate the full gothy chapters a lot.
Yes, indeed. Alrighty then. And then I'm going to, was not able to pick one beforehand. So I'm going to pick, I was tempted to, because there is a tarot card that is mentioned in chapter 25 when Trelawney in her ramblings talks about the lightning struck tower, which is which is tarot card number 16. Which is like calamity and chaos. But I chose to save that for later because the next chapter, as you saw, is called The Lightning Struck Tower. So that is the first time of Harry the Rider like making such a direct literary allusion to the tarot cards. So I thought I would save for then. So for now, I'm shuffling and I think we've done that one, so let's try again. We've got the Ace of Wands.
Ace of Wands. I don't think that one's come up.
I don't think so. We've gotten like a few aces, but I don't think we got Ace of Wands. So let me just look it up. Ace of Wands. And they better not give me advertisements. As an ace, this wand card brings you pure potential. This time, yep, there is the ad that pops up.
Oh, man. That's annoying.
This time, in the spiritual, energetic realm, ideas are flowing to you, motivating and inspiring you to pursue a new path. You are open to receiving new opportunities that align with your higher self. A whole world of possibilities available to you. The Ace of Wands encourages you to follow your heart and live your passion. If you feel a strong pull towards a new project or path, but are questioning whether it will work, this card gives you a gentle nudge to pursue your passion. You can always start out small, treating the project or idea as an experiment or trial. Then if it feels good, keep doing it. And if it doesn't, make adjustments and try again.
It's a very optimistic card for a very dark chapter.
Yeah, I basically interpret Dumbledore giving off that energy in terms of him experimenting, literally trying to figure out this video game temple that that Voldemort has devised to hide this Horcrux. Because it literally reminds me of like one of the legends of Zelda. Like, you know, there's the Water Temple, there's the Fire Temple, there's the Spirit Temple, the Shadow Temple.
Yeah. I guess I could think about like Super Mario Brothers. If I was thinking about, I didn't play Legend of Zelda, but I mean, I guess that's probably the best application of that card, because otherwise it's like there nothing. I mean, again, I know I'm witnessing Dumbledore's demise. So, and I guess the one like little win would be, okay, we've got another Horcrux, but that's kind of it. I don't know.
Yeah. Which is not trivial in this universe in the grand scheme of things. But if you've been looking for a sign about whether this is the right project, then the Ace of Wands is a clear yes. Sprouting wand and the fertile landscape in the background are all positive indications that this idea has the potential to turn into something fulfilling and energizing. Well, if we want to go back to the super mundane of Harry's budding relationship with Ginny.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking like you know, acquiring of all these bits of Voldemort's soul, I guess that's a good thing. But yes, in his budding relationship, sounds like they're kind of having a little bit of a rocky time getting together. But I mean, like actually spending time with each other right now. But, you know, it's okay. They're not going to break up. Not celebrities. Well, I mean, Harry's kind of a celebrity.
But. Yeah. That the aces represent potential but not guaranteed results. So I guess that sort of sentiment around the aces is, yeah, it's opportunity, but that doesn't automatically yield a result. So the sense of in this chapter, like, you know, Harry was pretty confident that they could get out of it because Dumbledore is awesome and is a badass. Right. But it wasn't automatically guaranteed. And in fact, Harry put himself in a position of being heavily reliant on Dumbledore because he couldn't remember the stupid fire.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't know if we've ever been, at least it's not shown to us that Harry knows the spell or charm to summon fire. Like, he can summon water.
Yeah.
He can summon water. He can, I don't know. Again, I don't know if he can summon the other elements or not.
I don't know. That feels like, I mean, I guess it's probably a good application of it to have Dumbledore do it. I mean, I wonder how powerful that fire would have been from Harry versus Dumbledore. Probably not.
Yeah, just a little like flicker of flames.
Just like a sparkler instead of like a bottle rocket or something.
Indeed. Alrighty then. And then I just picked at random a card from my Black Moon Astrology Oracle cards. And I picked card number 6, Saturn.
Saturn. All right.
Yes, Saturn, which is... Saturn card says that it may feel bad now, but is going to be resolved. Saturn is the planet of the Reaper, the Lord of Karma, and this rainbow planet represents what is tangible and solid in our lives. The Greeks called Saturn Kronos, and Kronos was the father of Zeus. Kronos devoured his children to prevent losing his throne as king of the gods. Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
Saturn in astrology is often referred to as the god who ate his own children because the energy of this planet seems to show no mercy. But Saturn is not exactly cruelty. It simply points out what is true and cuts away what is delusional or no longer useful. So if we want to go for this Machiavellian energy, again, just Voldemort's use of zombies.
Yeah, that's very traditionally eating people.
Because again, it is unclear in this world of it's unclear with these zombies whether if they were to bite Harry that Harry would become one, or that they're more like a Song of Ice and Fire White Walkers, where you just die and you're just a reanimated corpse and like there's no sense of contamination.
Does that make, I mean, the all the bodies floating around, that wouldn't be all the people that have tried to
do that. Yeah, I'm presuming that there wouldn't be that many people, again, knowing of this place or, you know, so again, I'm assuming they were already there and Voldemort using them, or he just imported them in from from various atrocities he did in the 70s.
He was just like, this place is awesome because it's really scary. And then let's go forth. Okay.
Yeah. When the Saturn card presents itself, know that you are being challenged. What a concept. No, the ultimate challenge.
Yeah, I guess. I shouldn't think about it personally, but yes, there was definitely a challenge for them in this.
Yeah. Life may seem harsh and restrictive. You are facing an enemy who may be yourself. Saturn shows us that at times it is in our better interest not to have those things we want, and that if we were to have them, they could lead us to our destruction. Which I guess can be framed as, you know, obviously Dumbledore insists that you do everything I say, you will feed me this, you will feed me this potion. And then when he's under the influences of it, he keeps telling Harry, stop, and Harry has to suck it up and keep feeding him the potion.
Yeah. Ugh. It's a very interesting card here.
Yeah. On the more positive side, you may meet a fatherly type who will help you advance with your goals.
Oh, there we go. Harry and Dumbledore advancing with his goal of taking down Voldemort.
Yeah, Saturn can sometimes herald the appearance of a sage or a teacher.
That's very on the nose now.
Yes, this will be no small thing and can indicate a mentor arriving just when you are in most need of one.
With the lasso of fire, that only makes sense.
Indeed. So, not as random as I originally thought.
No.
Alrighty, and then we move on to our last exercise, fan fiction time.
Okay, well, let me weave you a tale here. So I'm putting some factors in this. My fan fiction was, what if Harry had to go back on his own? And that's assuming that he did kind of, Dumbledore died there, and he did kind of go, okay, I got the fire thing, and then he had to go by himself. I'm assuming, like, would he have taken his body with him? Would he have to leave it? Like, I mean, again, I feel like I'm not killing anybody too early. Like, I tried to kill Hermione in, like, book one.
Yeah. But,
like I said, I know Dumbledore's dying at some point relatively soon, but the repercussions of that.
Yeah, because I guess the question of would Harry be able to get back into the castle on his own? Like,
tell me more.
Just if Harry apparates back, like, Dumbledore has put more. He can't apparate in Hogwarts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
If there's extra protections and Harry can't get in, like, if he went by himself, like, literally getting had to leave Dumbledore's body, or even if he took Dumbledore's body, like, literally having to drag the body into the Shrieking Shack and taking him through the Shrieking Shack down the passageway to get into emerge at the Whomping Willow entrance.
That's it. It was just like the image of him, like, having this, like, tall gray wizard, like, and dragging this body, like, freaking Weekend at Bernie's, and like, oh, help. If he did take him with him, I don't know. I wonder what, I feel like he would have, like, in that situation, eventually they would have made it back to Hogwarts.
Yeah.
It would have been slow.
Again, if, you know, Dumbledore is a planner, like, if he presumed, yeah, I'm gonna die, you know, making the enchantment so Harry can get into the castle quickly and Harry can just run in screaming with his arms flailing, help, help.
I feel like if that situation played out, like, just to step it back, like, if Dumbledore would have died, he would have, like, had a lovely last word that he would have, like, it would have been like, Cruciatus curse. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And then he would have been like, all right, and you have to figure that out. But that's a bleak. I'm just trying to, you know, I'm not trying to delay the inevitable. That's what I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. But what was yours? That was the only one I could.
You know, really, again, we have this. We have this situation where, again, a very interesting place that Voldemort chooses to hide his Horcrux. What if the Horcrux was hidden somewhere totally different? What if the Horcrux was hidden in the dilapidated building of the orphanage? What would those,
cool.
Yeah, what would those challenges and enchantments and stuff look like?
Just spooky ghosts of children.
Yeah,
Inferi children. Ew. Inferi children. That'd be scary.
Inferi children, or again, being a part of his past. Like, what if there was a Horcrux in the Riddle House? And that was its own and that was its own Legend of Zelda temple with its own shit.
Yeah. I feel like he would have booby trapped that pretty heavily. Like, there's only so much you can do with this.
Yeah,
cave,
like, but. Yeah, there's and with the Riddle House, it's you know, again, people can put it together. Like, there are substantially more people who, even though they're not really talking about it, that know that Voldemort was once Tom Riddle and that family connection. Significantly less people would have access to the information that, yeah, I tortured two kids here.
Yeah. Just be like screaming children. That'd be terrifying. I'm just trying to always think of like the worst thing, screaming, trying children in the background. I don't know, man. He could do some pretty effed up stuff. I think his little setting for this is fine, but like, I think Amy's mind is very dark and taking it to worse places. So you could put that Horcrux.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, what if it was someone, I'm just thinking of this right now, what if it was someone else who blabbed to Voldemort about the prophecy?
Like a Death Eater or just somebody else random?
I guess I'm just thinking, like, maybe if it wasn't a Death Eater, but just accidentally leaking that information, like, what if he found out that it was actual, like, by accident, it was Remus or Sirius who spilled the beans, again, by accident.
Like, he was just, like, at Hogsmeade and been like, I heard this wild thing, and he was like, somebody
and then
ever
someone,
heard it.
Yeah.
I could see like, what's his face? Slughorn have like try to do a deal with him for like some vital information or something like that, because it didn't mean anything to him at that point. And I mean, even, you know, Dumbledore, whether Harry believes it or not, is like, he had no idea it was you. And I was thinking like that makes it any better.
Yeah. Like, I guess he was trying to frame it as this wasn't specifically about the vendetta against your dad. Like, he didn't know who the hell
Voldemort
was going to pick.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't, but I, that just was kind of funny. I don't know. I don't think that would have changed Harry's outlook at Snape, but
yeah, like, again, this is just, you know, further reinforcing, and quite frankly, Harry doesn't need any more reinforcing of his opinion in regards to Snape.
I mean, yeah, gosh. I don't know. I'm trying to think of who a good person, one of the Malfoys is the only one I could think of.
Yeah, that's possible. But anyway, thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time and we'll get to chapters 27 and 28. The Lightning Struck Tower and Flight of the Prince.
Oh my, what the hell?
No, so suspenseful.
I know, oh my god.
All right, then catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.